So hi, you're listening to the Game Designer Game Podcast, and I'm your host Pietro Polsinelli. In this episode, we are with Federico Fasce, who is an Italian game designer at Eurostar. And so can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I was a game designer, I think, since 1997 or so. I work for two Italian companies, so one of them unfortunately went bankrupt in 2002, at the end of 2002, actually. And the other one is more or less still there. It was called Artematica. Now I just decided to try to do all by myself. So I'm trying to go indie. We're a small team of, we are four people, and we are trying to make games, two kind of games. From one side, we are a traditional indie developer, and we are trying to do what we like, and from the other side, you know, because we have to survive and sustain ourselves, we do third-party work mainly for advert gaming and stuff like that.
Okay, so let's start from your the very beginning. So how did it come to you to start as a game designer? I mean, this is not a very frequent, common profession, at least in Italy.
Yeah, it's actually, I was passionate about games and video games since I was very, very young. I remember I started playing, maybe I was 6 or 7 years old, with Asteroids. Yes, I'm that old. And now, and then, obviously, there was no such thing at the game designer back then. Mm-hmm. I can clearly remember when I was about 14 or so, reading in a game magazine, I don't remember what, about the game designer profession, and it occurred to me that actually I always loved making games, or at least when I was younger, kind of thinking about how a good game would be. So I kind of tried to to become a game designer, but it was a really strange path toward that, because I started actually as an artist. I made 3D art since 1994 or so. Yeah, we were designing in virtual sets for a kid television show.
Okay.
Yeah, and then little by little, I kind of tried to move to the field of game design. That was the one I felt more natural in it. Okay. I don't know, it kind of suited me. So
so you felt it suited you. And which was the very first game you entirely designed yourself?
The very first game I entirely designed myself, I believe it was called I Cristalli di Avalon. And it was a very small flash adventure I did when I was at Artematica. And this game was actually unreleased for a long time, because it was made, I think we made it with the completely wrong technology, and then was translated back to Flash and was published a few years later.
So it was an adventure game?
Yeah, it was a very small adventure game. Point and click, very classical.
Okay, and so you also wrote all the narrative, the dialogues.
Yeah, I kind of wrote everything. You have to think it's really, really small, few locations, and mainly first person, pre-rendered, kind of like Myst or something, but much, much simpler.
And in which kind of environment? I mean, fantasy or?
It was a kind of fantasy environment between the real world and Avalon. So yeah, it was a bit of a strange new age like.
Okay, new age like. And so, how did you move on from there?
Then it was really strange because I left Artematica and I really didn't know what was about to do then.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this call from this company which was about to hire a lot of people, and it was called Trecision. And there I started directly as a game designer. And I made some video directing, real-time video directing for The Watchmaker, which was an adventure mm-hmm. that they were releasing. And I made some very little flash game. Mostly they were a satirical game about the political situation in Italy back then.
This was self-produced?
No. There was produced by Trecision for...
Okay.
And then I was put on a quite big project, and we were quite an experienced. So the project was actually bigger than us, and it didn't that well. It was an arcade racing game it was initially meant to be played just only online, but it was 2001 maybe, and. Yeah, we don't have things like broadband, and online gaming was just at its start, so it was really difficult, and the project was closed. We tried to revive it many times, but with no luck.
Okay.
And then I made another game, which was a tie-in of the Italian version of the television show Big Brother, and we have this big challenge where we have to try to make a game which was fun from a television show which wasn't fun at all. And this went pretty well for being an Italian game, almost entirely self-produced. We sold some. I think they sold a good deal of copy, both for PC and PS1.
Okay.
So, nice. Then I stopped. After the company went bankrupt, I stopped being a game designer for a few years. I go back to the university, went back to the university. Then actually I made a lot of work as a freelance web designer and community designer.
Okay.
And then... In 2007, I realized that design and UX design, interaction design, was looking a lot to the work of game designers
mm-hmm.
with inspiration. And then I decided to go back to game design because just seemed right to me. And for a little time, I tried to put the two things together and to continue working into the web. But then I moved on and I say to myself, no, what I really want to do is to making games and so on.
Okay. So before we jump to your latest projects and company, tell me about one thing, because you told us your path through the years and which were the works you were working on. But I'd like to know also, because you started in doing game design, like improvising, I guess. But did you sort of refine your art through the games, through the attempts, through some experience, through some readings, or you just went by with experience?
Well, during the first period, it was really, really a trial and error process because back in the early 90s, there wasn't so much literature about game design. So you have to try to figure out how to do things. And then when I got back to the university and then to my job as a web developer, I started to get into contact with the works like Rules of Play by Katie Sell and Eric mm-hmm. Zimmerman. I think it's the best manual about game design right now, and a lot of other books and papers. And I started to understand that there was a way to learn game design not only by trial and error, but to actually reading what people have done before me and what they have discovered. And I think right now I'm a better designer because it's not only the experience, but what I've read and learned about that as well.
Okay, so let's make the last jump. So you at university, you started studying, you started learning, you already had a considerable experience, and then what did you do?
And then I decided with my girlfriend and another woman, which is our third partner, we decided to try to make a little company and to start making game of our own. So we founded Rustar, and we are trying. We are alive from for 3 years right now, and I think the first period was really about getting to know what we want and what we would be able to do. Okay. And then in the second year, the pieces start to move together, and we have much clearer idea of what we are now. Mm-hmm. So basically, we are still growing, but in the last year or so, I think we have made some great improvement, and we are ready to make something on our own, which wasn't really true when we opened, I think.
Okay, so you're talking now about focusing on certain game design ideas, or reaching technological maturity, or both, or what?
Actually, both. I must say we took a lot of advantage in tools like Unity, because you don't need to be a full-grown programmer to do something with that. You can just jump in and learn a lot of stuff by doing. But there was obviously even another side of all that, and it was becoming actually a team, learning to work together, learning what are the specific abilities of each team members. Because actually, yes, I was a game designer. Both my partners come from the journalism field.
Mm-hmm.
But they learned a lot of stuff during these years, and they are finding their way and their place in our team. So it's okay. Good. We have a fourth team member which is working with us, which really put an equilibrium in what we are. He's really, really good. He learns so fast. He's a good musician. He's a kind of an all-around artist. And so, yeah, it's good. I think we are finally ready to try something on our own.
Okay. But do you still work as a company as also as a contractor?
Yeah, we still do, because basically it's a good and quite reliable source of sustain. You kind of get the money to make your own project from that. So yeah, and plus I teach some classes, workshop about game design. So yeah, that's business that kind of make us go on.
So you're a team. From hearing your specialities, you're a team. You would be capable of also doing like the game design document analysis and do the storyboarding and all this kind of work also.
Definitely, we did that for several companies here in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We make both review and analysis of game design for games that are already almost done. We do tuning and balancing, and then we can obviously we can come up with our game design document if someone needs that. And turns out in Italy, a lot of companies are realizing that having the help of a game designer is quite worth it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a more delicate question. Now, as you know, as you already hinted before, there's a lot of interest and also work to be done, and also discussion about the relationship of game design and applied in non-gaming contexts. Which frequently goes under the debated label of gamification. Now, do you have experience and opinions on this?
Actually, we make a few consults for some startup companies about gamification. We kind of think that was a really good idea. It started the idea of applying game design and using what game design learned about interaction design and stuff and applying to web design. Then something weird happened, and gamification became just using points and badges and in website with no apparent reason. So I still think that the argument of using game design for a non-game application is still valid, but I also think that probably we need to go deeper than to just accepting the fact that we can put points and badges. There's a lot more to it, and I think it's worth exploring.
Okay, well, we had Sebastian Detterding here on this podcast.
I love him. I love him. His slides shows are great. Just wait.
Yeah,
he's really, really good.
Yeah, in fact, was that? I think that was a great podcast. Anyway, so now going forward, what are you preparing now on your own? I mean, what is Eurostar preparing? What are your plans? What are the games you're designing? At least, just tell us what you can tell, of course.
Yeah, I think it's there are no secrets in that. we are actually working on a prototype we developed initially for the last global game jam, and it's called An Heuristic, and actually. It has a kind of strange story because we discussed a lot about a certain game we want to make in this year, and it turns out that this small prototype, which is very, very small, we had just few interactions in it, kind of matched the ideas we had about the other games. So we are trying to make them converge in some way. And it's a really, really experimental game. It will be about a world which is dying, and you have a little time in this world to just experience something and try to make the last moment of this world be worth. So
so this is connected to the heartbeat theme.
Yeah, it's connected to the world has this big crystal heart at its center, which is beating, and it kind of responds emotionally with what you do in the world. So that's the basic idea about it. So. And now we are trying to put together a more complex prototype about that and see what happens. Okay. And then we have a second project, which
Hold on. Let's stop. So do you have a link on the Global Game Jam site of what you've done so far?
Yes, definitely. Actually, I have for you a link.
We'll put it in the notes of the podcast. And so you were saying the second project?
The second project is about a contest that they made in the Netherlands to celebrate the 500 years of work of Hieronymus Bosch.
Mm-hmm.
And game we have to, for the contest, to submit a concept of how we see a game which could convey the art and the work of Hieronymus Bosch in a good way. And then we have been selected, so we have time, we have a few months to carve a prototype out of it. So we are trying to make a game in which we try to capture not only the art of Bosch, but even the way he thought about life and everything, which is quite pessimistic, I think, but it's interesting. So yeah, it's a lovely little project we have here, because we got to know this artist way better than some people do. I mean, often Bosch is regarded as the artist with all these tiny little strange creatures, and there's a lot more to it, and we love to explore it in our game.
In fact, games often are a way to give a simple access to more articulated and complex notions, like historical games. So I understand what you're doing. And okay, so this seems to interesting projects. And as I've read, I've seen that you often discussing game design.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your suggested readings for a beginning game designer?
As I said, I think Rules of Play is the best book about game design right now, and it's really, really accurate and deep. Obviously, a lot of people will be intimidated by this.
By the size.
Like 600. But it's worth it, totally. I think that
I have it on my shelf, and I'm a bit. I still haven't gone through it, I must confess.
I think that if you want to start a path about game design and understand how really game mechanic works to deliver meaning, I think that the best place to start is the MDA framework by Robin Hanke, Robert Zubek, and Mark LeBlanc. I think that is really, it's a very short paper. You can find
it. Yeah, I know that. I know it. Yes.
But it's really, really compressed wisdom. There's a lot of stuff into it. And I think, that's the starting point, definitely, for me.
And what do you think of The Art of Game Design by Jesse Schell?
It's a really good book, indeed. Yeah, I read it a long time ago, and I find it really good, straight to the point, very practical.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Okay. And Coster Theory of Fun?
Theory of Fun is a good game about understanding another take on about understanding how games work and games deliver meaning and to learn stuff. I think it's another, it's another that you definitely have to put in your on your shelf if you are studying game design.
One of my latest additions is Game Mechanics Advanced Game Design. It's a book that goes along with a Machinations framework. It's linked to game grammars. In fact, it was suggested by Detterding. Do you know this work?
That's pretty interesting. I couldn't have the time to read it all. I just had a quick glimpse on it. And I think it's a really great idea to try to develop a language to show people to schematize game mechanics. So I'm pretty curious about how it's working. And they are giving a talk at the next GDC, and I think I definitely go to listen to them. But I want to read this book so badly. I have a lot of time, but I will, and it seems really, really great.
Yeah, it's really, really beautifully written, but it's quite dense. I mean, it's not light reading. It's harder than like a theory of fun. And another question I wanted to ask you is do you ever do paper prototyping? I mean, like doing a board game of your idea or physical games?
Yes, we try all the time to start with paper prototyping. It's not always possible. It's not always that easy, but we are trying. We have a lot of game bits and stuff in our office to try to prototype games. And actually, we made two board games. One of them, it was a quick thing of about 1 week, and it's not released, and probably it's completely broken, but we try back. So it probably is, but the other one was selected for the final phase of Premio Archimede, which is one of I think the most important awards here in Italy for not published board games. Mm-hmm. It was good because it was really our first take in making a board game. But I really believe in mixing. I believe that game design is about designing games, not just video games or just a little section of what games are. So I love to try and design board games and stuff like that. So, and we use it both ways. As a prototyping tool and as a way to make a different kind of games.
Okay. Now, a different kind of question. Now, what are your plans for marketing your games? What's your market? What are your plans, your intentions?
I believe... I believe that the internet is a great, great resource for marketing. And we definitely, in the last few months, we have definitely tried to improve a lot our online communication. Mm-hmm. We try as more active as we can on Twitter, on Facebook, and we are completely redesigning our website to be a place that really shows what we are doing. And yeah, I think that it's a bit of a mess right now because, you know, with the mobile game explosion, you have an awful lot of games. It's really, really difficult to emerge. But I still think that if you are to catch your niche of people, the niche of people you are talking to, and the only way to do is using in a good way the internet, you can accomplish a great deal of things. And plus I've learned an awful lot of stuff by giving and taking from and to the community. I mean, I follow game designers and game developer, especially in the indie area. And I think that this community is really, really worth it if you want to. And it could be a good strategy to even to market your game.
So you're not thinking of distributions of publishers. You're thinking of going completely indie and do it independently.
No, we don't think about publishers, but we are not against the whole publishing thing. We just think that before even talk to a publisher, we need to be a little more strong and more established and to have some strong products. So we want to start small and to start from the bottom of it. Then we'll see. We are definitely open to talk with publisher and all that. We are just, I think we are just not there yet.
Okay. Okay. Well, just one last question. One last question is about, like, what are your favorite games? This is a very, usually people I interview and talk about, they don't like this question, but I ask it anyway.
It's a really difficult question. In fact, I think my tasting game is kind of always changing. Actually, I'm really. If you asked me this question just last year, probably I have answered that Zelda and Mario series are the ones that influenced me the most. But the truth is, I'm always looking for strange games, for games that that try to tell something different. So, for now, if you uh-huh. ask me. My answer would be that three games have influenced me in the last few months, and they are Proteus, which is a indie game. It's about walking into an island, and it's based a lot of talk and flames on over the internet. And the first episode of Kentucky Route Zero, which is quite a different take in the point-and-click adventure landscape.
I will try it.
Really, really, really nice. And another thing that I think influenced me is a small Italian product, which is called Mirror Moon by Santa Ragione. Mm-hmm. Small team, Santa Ragione and Paolo Taglie, actually, because I kind of saw this game growing up, because it was developed at the 2012 Global Game Jam in Genova, and I was there too. Now it's a finalist at the IGF for the Nuovo Award, but what really hit me about this game is the way it was conceived, a kind of an explorative game design way of making a game. They started from a simple mechanic, they implemented it, and they explored and tried to expand in different ways. So it was really instructed me to watch this game being built.
Revolving on the mechanic, the fact that they expanded, but they kept close to a simple mechanic.
So yeah, that's I think that's it. I'm playing a lot of stuff every day, so it's difficult. I thought very very few products because I don't have all that time. Some games I just watch them and try to get the hang of them, and then move on. But Proteus really, if I have to say one game, Proteus really hit me, because it's a way of thinking out of the box and not saying okay, the game must have this and this and this stuff in it, but working totally with a complete freedom.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever try the Esther?
Yeah, I tried it, and I have to say, maybe I liked it less than Proteus, because I think Proteus is in some ways more true to itself.
No, the Esther has a strong narrative, explicitly narrative component, which is alien to Proteus.
I like more the way Proteus tries to tell a story without words, but just trying to emotion you. I think emotions are a big part of games, and we should work more keeping emotions in mind. I love another game. Yeah, how can I forget this? Another game that that really influenced me in the past few months is definitely Journey. Great, because they designed it to make the player feel certain emotion, that it works brilliantly. So yeah, Journey there.
But so this seems, well, there's inevitably another question coming, because you hinted to this. I mean, so the relationship between games and narrative, which is one of the big big deals, and anybody who's doing game design knows that this is a subtle point. And so do you have an opinion, or do you have any considerations about this?
Well, I think games are a great platform to do a lot of things, and I think games are a great platform to make players feel emotions. And you can make players feel emotion even through narrative. And I think narrative will still be a part of some games. Not all games rely on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of strange because a lot of people call games a medium, but I prefer to see them as a container where you can put different media. And narrative could be one. And there are a lot of games that do this extremely right. I think about BioShock, for example. The whole BioShock series treat narrative in a great way. They are able to tell you a story and to feel part, to make you feel part of this story in a really, really innovative way by using this kind of emergent narrative you pick up here and there, and even making a kind of meta discourse about what games are, about mm-hmm. what it means obeying to rules and take moral choices and like that. So I definitely games can be used for narrative, and a lot of people show that in a very efficient way. So I'm not one of the of those people saying no, games are games and are different things. I think that you can have narrative, you can have a game which is just moving pieces or something like that, and there still will be both great games, I think.
Okay, well, thanks. This was really nice talking to you, and we hope to have you soon again in the future.
No problem. Definitely, I'd like this.
And so all the best to you and to the Eurostar team.
Thank you. See you soon.
See you soon.